Okay, you guys, here we go. She Runs Ultras, episode number 170. Today, I want to share just a little bit about the PEMI loop that we did last weekend. For those of you guys that missed it, a few of my friends and I went out and attempted the PEMI loop here in New Hampshire, the White Mountains of New Hampshire. Spoiler alert, we did not make it the whole way around, but it was a good time nonetheless, and I've got some stuff that I want to share with you about that. So let's just talk a little bit about the location of the hike, because I think not many people know where New Hampshire is. It's actually kind of funny. In all my years of traveling around the United States, when I would meet people and they would ask, oh, where are you from? And I would tell them, New Hampshire, you would see this puzzled look come across their face, like they couldn't place the state amongst the 50. And I'd have to describe that it was up in the Northeast, like near Boston. It's always like, that's the landmark. That's the city. It's somewhere between New York City and Boston, right? Very vague positioning, but nonetheless, that seemed to always work. So in the White Mountains of New Hampshire, that's a couple hours north of where I live. So I'm down sort of around the Massachusetts border. So you have to drive up a couple of hours and into the White Mountains, which is an amazing place, but it's known for difficulty, challenging hikes, beautiful, but also very unpredictable weather. And that was a little bit of what we had. So let's talk a little bit about the PEMI loop. PEMI is short for Pemigewasset. And so people mostly just call it the PEMI loop, but officially it's not actually one trail that creates this loop. It's actually got a collection of different trails that are strung together, and I won't bore you with exactly which trails make up the loop, but basically you're jumping from one trail to the next to make this sort of like a lollipop. There's a short trail that starts out. We started at Lincoln Woods, and you have to go up. If you're looking at the map, you go up for a little bit, and then you can go clockwise or counterclockwise. We actually decided to go clockwise. So we went off to the left first. And I found when I was doing a little bit of research for this podcast episode that Backpacker Magazine actually called the PEMI Loop the second hardest day hike in America, which is very interesting. Also par for the course. Not that I've done every day hike ever, but I can attest to the fact that the PEMI Loop is very challenging. There's over 9,000 feet of climbing, and the AMC guide actually lists it as a 20-hour hike, but you'll get people that do it 1 day, 2 day, 3 days. There's ways that you can stop and camp or stay at huts along the way. And one of the threads in our text discussion before we set out on the hike was, you know, how fast do you think we're going to do this thing? And Frank actually looked up the record for the mixed group. So like a group comprised of both men and women. And I can't remember what it was. I want to say like 9 hours and change, like maybe 9:35. I didn't look it up. I should have, but 9 hours and change. So he jokingly was like, oh yeah, I totally think we can do that. But I wanted to point out that there are men's and women's FKTs, so fastest known times on this loop, on these trails. And it is crazy, you guys. Something like between 6 and 7 hours for the men's and women's FKTs respectively. Props to those people. This trail is hard. There is so much climbing. There's so much technicality to it that anyone that can do it in 6 or 7 hours, let alone 9 hours, you guys, is wild. We definitely were aiming for more of the like 14-hour time span. So like I mentioned, we started out at Lincoln Woods and we went clockwise. And I want to insert a couple of the audio notes, the audio voice memos that I've made, much like I've done in previous podcasts for like Ghost Train and Tahoe. I didn't get many because, as you'll hear right away, the rain was relentless. But I think it would be helpful to hear some of the notes that I took the night before. So we went up on Friday night. I drove up on Friday night with the intention of camping very close to Lincoln Woods to start with, so that all we had to do was get up and just drive a half a mile to the trailhead. And a couple other people, Sarah and Nicole, also decided to camp that night too. So here's one of the notes that I took, one of the audio voice memos that I took on Friday night. Okay, guys, it is Friday night at 8:35 p.m. 8:35 p.m., excuse me. And I'm in the back of the truck. I am getting all my stuff ready. Sarah is in her car next to me. I just had to close the tailgate of the truck because it's starting to rain and the thunder is coming and I'm attracting mosquitoes into my car tent. I'm going to sleep in the back of my car tonight. And so we're just getting everything ready. So Sarah and I are just going through all our stuff, deciding what layers we're going to bring, how we're going to pack it, all that fun stuff. We're waiting for everybody else to get here. Some people will be arriving shortly. Some people, I think, are coming tomorrow morning. So just wanted to get the first voice memo of the day done and give you, set the scene, give you some context. I'm basically surrounded by all of my stuff in the back of the 4Runner. And the rain is definitely coming down now. It has increased significantly. So yeah, it should be a good long night. So that's where we're at. The plan is to get up early in the morning, pre-dawn, and assess the weather. We may not be able to do the actual Pemi Loop because of the weather. The forecast might be for some lightning and some high winds, so we might have to amend our original plan. But yeah, we will keep you updated. So that's all the news that's fit to report for now, and we'll be back shortly. Okay, 8:45, two things. In case you didn't already know, those window screens that you slip over the windows of your car, like if you're going to sleep in there and you want to crack the windows, yeah, those things are bullshit. Not only do they not really work, it's also not a good idea to have them in your car while it's raining. I didn't even have the windows open and I had water coming in, which I'm not happy about. And then just now, a huge crack of thunder, you guys, like not very far away from us. So it is going to be an interesting night. Still sitting in the back of my car, surrounded by all of my stuff, trying to make the pack work and pack all of my snacks. Julie would be so proud of me. I've got all of my stuff lined up and ready to go. Just got to put it in its own respective pouches. Whew. Here we go. Okay, guys, it's about 10:15. Nicole is here. Sarah is here. We are all sleeping in our cars. Have no idea where Frank and Marty are, but they'll get here at some point. I think they're actually arriving earlier in the morning. So hoping to get a couple hours of sleep. Getting up at 3:30, have a couple alarms set so that I don't sleep through the one alarm. Get up, make some coffee and some oatmeal, get dressed, and then we're going to walk up the street to the trailhead and, like I said before, make a game time decision about what we do in terms of the trail. Do we do the whole Pemi Loop or do we do some other trails in an effort to get about a 50K in, but not have to go above the tree line where it might get too exposed, too windy, too cold, maybe thunder and lightning. So we'll have to see. We don't get cell service here, so tough to check the weather when you don't get cell service. So hopefully get a few hours of sleep and then continue with the adventure. So on to the next. Okay, guys, it is Saturday, 3:06 in the morning. When I went to bed, it was not raining, and then progressively overnight, the rain got worse. It's coming down
pretty good right now. And I just can't sleep anymore. I'm not really actually sleeping much at all. So I decided I would get up and start slowly getting ready. Yeah, I'm not sure how this is gonna go. As long as it stays warm, the rain's not a problem. But if it gets cold, then that's a whole other element to deal with. So, I don't know. I'm hopeful, but I'm not sure. So I'm just gonna get dressed, make some oatmeal, and see what happens. So I'll keep you posted.
So as you can hear, there was rain, and then there wasn't rain, and then there was rain again. And that pretty much was not only how the night went, but how the day went on Saturday. So we ended up leaving Lincoln Woods, or sorry, the campground, Hancock Campground, where we stayed, just driving up the street to Lincoln Woods, where we met everybody. And we started out right around 4:15 a.m. And like I said, we went the clockwise direction. So when you leave Lincoln Woods and you go up the trail, eventually you have to make a choice. And so we veer left. And there was a board posted at the hut at Lincoln Woods that I posted on Instagram. Maybe I'll post it again so you guys can see it. But it was essentially the rangers posting the weather forecast. So for Friday night and for Saturday. And so we stood there at 4:15 on Saturday morning looking at the board being like, okay. It wasn't an unknown because it had been raining. The temperatures were hovering around the 50s. And we knew there was the possibility of thunder and high winds at the top. I mean, when you go from, I don't know what we started out at elevation wise, but let's just say 1500 feet and you climb all the way up to 4,000 and 5,000 feet, you know that obviously the conditions are going to change up there. So we just went into this fully eyes open, understanding what the situation was going to be, being prepared and knowing that we might have to pull the plug and being okay with that ahead of time. So we're all suited up. It's raining. I've got my pack full. I actually ended up having to go with, I don't know if you guys remember this, way back, I bought so many packs. Actually, some people still talk about this to this day, about my pack saga leading up to Tahoe. I bought a pack from Ultimate Direction, the Fast Packer 20 maybe, and I bought two of them, different sizes. I sold one, ended up keeping the other one because nobody wanted to buy it. And that's the pack I actually used for this hike, this fast pack, because I knew that my Salomon wasn't going to provide enough space, especially if it was going to be raining. So the Salomon pack is great if it's, you know, if it's a shorter, I say shorter, even though I used it for Tahoe, but it didn't rain in Tahoe and I could stuff a lot of layers on the inside and the outside. And because it wasn't raining, I obviously didn't have to worry about them getting wet. With this adventure, it was going to basically rain the whole time. So I needed to have a way to carry lots of warmth and lots of safety gear inside something that I could put a trash bag into to doubly keep everything safe. And the Salomon just wasn't going to cut it. So this fast packer is sort of like a day pack. I like it for its volume, but I don't love it because it doesn't have a lot of pockets that you can access things. So that was my big struggle, was always asking people to help me access snacks out of the back, because there are like two little pockets up front. One was for my cell phone and the other I used for my knife and my safety whistle and my chapstick, because you always have to have chapstick. And so there just wasn't enough space to stuff any snacks. So that's a quick pack review, pros and cons. But so we headed out. We were all suited up for rain right away on the trails, just huge puddles, lots of notes from the rangers about, you know, stay on the trail, because we were right next to the river for the beginning part. And we actually had to go over this suspension bridge that I didn't know was a suspension bridge at first. So I thought I was really having some balance issues. And then I realized it was swaying a little bit. It's not a traditional suspension bridge when you look at it. Plus, it was kind of dark. We had to start with our headlamps, like borderline. There was enough light that you could see a couple feet ahead of you, but not enough that you could go without a headlamp. So we started up the trail and we just kept going. So it rained for probably the first hour or so. It rained hard. And actually, right before we started out, I should back up. I took another voice memo of the three of us standing at the hut that I want to share with you before I dig too deep into going forwards up the trail. All right, ladies, it is about 4:25 in the morning, Saturday morning. Thoughts, feelings.
It's a little soggy. It's a little foggy, but we're ready to go. We've got all the gear. We're psyched. As you can hear in our voices.
So much enthusiasm. How much sleep did you get last night?
Very little. A lot of listening to the rain and dealing with dread, but we're here.
And packing and unpacking my bag in my head.
Yeah, I did a lot of that too. I did a lot of worrying about, was this going to get worse? Like, is the rain going to get worse? Yeah. And then I would like doze off for a little bit.
And then, yep, it got worse.
Yeah, and then it got worse, and then it got better again.
To be fair, getting out of the car, there was less rain. A lot of what I was hearing was, you know, camping next to the river. Mm. I could hear a lot of the river noises. So yeah. It wasn't as bad getting out of the car as I maybe had thought it would be, just based on the sound level.
You good?
You guys done goofing off?
Hey, ease up there.
She's working.
Ease up there. I'm working. This is how I get a tax write-off for this trip. So as you can hear, everybody's super excited to get started at 4:25-ish in the morning. That was Frank that you heard in the background telling us to quit goofing off. So we headed up the trail. And like I said, for the first couple of hours, it just rained. I mean, it's tough to describe because everything is, I mean, actually, it's not. Everything was wet. The rocks were wet. The rocks were slippery. The trails were full of puddles. We spent a lot of time trying to navigate around puddles to keep our feet as dry as possible for as long as possible. And I have to fully admit that when we got back to our cars at the end of the day, my feet were so waterlogged. It looked like I had been in the bath for, 10, 12 hours, because that's essentially what had happened, you know. I didn't even bother to change my socks later on when I had the opportunity, because sweat shoes, dry socks doesn't even really matter. Anyway, so we kept going up the trail. And like I said, I won't go through every single trail name that we hit, but there did come a time where the rain stopped and we did get a glimmer of sunshine for a few minutes. I was jokingly telling people, oh, there's a ray of sunshine. There's a ray of sunshine, even though there was no blue sky in sight. We got up around, 4,000 or 5,000 feet. We did some crazy climbing. The beginning of this is obviously all climbing. So we dug in and did the stairs to nowhere. There's a couple sections of the course where trail volunteers have built literal staircases out of wood to help you ascend some of the more technical spots, which is funny. I shared a few of those. There's a video on my Instagram feed of us if you want to see that, hiking up those stairs. And we just kept plodding right along. Ironically, we didn't see any wildlife, heard lots of birds, but we didn't see any bears. We didn't see any deer or moose. Frank thought he saw some moose scat, but turned out it was just pine cones. So we just kept working our way up. And about, 6-7 hours into it, we started to, or at least I started to realize, like, we're not on pace to hit our target. And that's to be expected with the weather and the conditions of the trails. And it was just really challenging. The low light, I mean, all the things. So we sped up a little bit. We bagged a couple of 4,000 footers. And when we got up onto some of the more exposed ridges, it became very apparent that things were and could potentially get really dicey. The wind kicked up, the temperatures dropped. I mean, again, all to be expected, but there were a few sections where I was kind of uncomfortable, just like, this could turn sideways. I have a real issue with wind, because I know how quickly that can turn into a real shit show if you're not prepared and if you're not moving and if you don't have the warm layers. And again, the rain on top of all of this, you know, if it were just cool and just windy, that'd be one thing. But the rain on top of it, just that added level, that added element, makes it really challenging. So at one point, we did a little huddle between the rocks and the trees where we could catch a break in the wind to talk about pace and changing course. And ultimately, we decided to pull the plug and go down past the Galehead Hut, which is actually like a manned ranger station. You can stay there overnight. They've got bunk rooms and there's like a full kitchen. And even if you're a day hiker or a through hiker, you can stop there and get food and dry off and warm up. So it's a great little respite spot. But in order to get there, you have to go down this very steep, very slippery when it's rainy, rocky trail. And some of these rocks are so slippery, you guys. We went down backwards. We contemplated sliding on our butts. I mean, it was treacherous to say the least. Going up probably was much, much easier. Going down, very challenging, but it was worth it. We got to the hut. We got out of the rain. There was actually a break in the rain at this point too, which was nice because you could start to actually see where you were going and not just be confined to looking at the 3 or 2 feet in front of you. So we got to the hut and we decided to, a couple of us switched pants. Some people switched socks, tried to get dry and warm, and then we just proceeded to keep going down, 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 down. It was very slow going. I think that trail was about 3 miles, maybe approaching 4 miles. It took us a long time because we could not move fast. We really had to be careful. The other element of this too is Frank, as I mentioned, was one of the people that was with us, and he's got Tahoe, the Tahoe 200, in just about a month. So where we might have pushed the pace in certain other areas, we really pulled back and went slow and cautiously, because the last thing that we wanted was for anything to happen to Frank that would impair his ability to show up to Tahoe at 100% and pull off that race. So it was slow going all the way down. We encountered quite a few people that were going up that trail headed towards the hut. Some we stopped to talk to. They were sort of impressed that we had started at Lincoln Woods and made it all the way there. And a lot of those people that were coming up weren't really dressed for the conditions that we knew to be true at the top of the mountain. So there was a lot of discussion around, I hope they have gear up at the hut, because like they don't look prepared for what they're about to face. But anyway, so we made it all the way back down, and now we're presented with a new problem, because this place that we spit ourselves out is not the location at which we started. So we had a choice, actually, when we were deciding to pull the plug. We could have gone a couple different ways, and we made this calculated decision to show up at this particular parking area because it was more populated and had a higher probability that someone would be there for us to potentially catch a ride from, maybe even hitchhike if we had to, because we needed to make it all the way back around, so to speak, to get back to our cars, to get back to the campground. So we got down, and luckily there were a couple of volunteers there. There were some shuttles, but they were sort of pre-programmed. They had specific routes that they were or needed to go on because there were hikers that were expecting them to show up at regular intervals, so they couldn't break their pattern to take us where we needed to go. But luckily, one of the, I think they were AMC volunteers, they were almost done with their shift, and one of them volunteered to drive Marty back to his van so that he could come back and get us so that we could go back. So it was like point to point to point here. But luckily that worked out nicely. So we just had to hang out at the ranger station for about half an hour until Marty could come back and get us. And then we were home. We were back at our cars at the very least. But so eventful, but not eventful. So much fun. Lots of lessons learned. And I want to just talk real quick about a few of the things that I think are important to keep in mind when you're attempting something like this. Because You know, I live near a mountain down here in southern New Hampshire called Mount Monadnock. And actually, right before I got onto the computer to record this podcast episode, I saw an update that another hiker had to be rescued off Mount Monadnock. Now, Monadnock is not that high, and it's not super challenging, but in some respects it is, especially if you just show up there with... And I've seen this with like your KED sneakers and one 16-ounce disposable water bottle, no backpack, no layers, no nothing. And I've seen people head up Monadnock on not great days with just that level of gear. And I have a thought in my mind. I worry about them because I know what that mountain is like. So even that quote unquote little mountain in my backyard that I've summited quite a few times, I don't take it for granted. So going into this, knowing that it was in the White Mountains and that the terrain and the elevation would be much more significant and much more challenging, we did a lot of these things, and these come second nature to me, but I want to talk about them with you because maybe they don't for you. And I'm hoping that this will keep you from being one of those people that needs to be rescued off the mountain. Okay. So the first is to do your research and know what you're getting into. So have a look at a map, understand the elevation profile. If you're not familiar with how to read a traditional terrain map, that's got a skill that's really helpful. And at the very least, you can understand some of the basics about elevation and direction and reading the surrounding terrain so that you know where the winds might come out of. It's not that challenging. I'm sure you could find a course or a video on YouTube on how to do it. And I'm not an expert by any stretch of the imagination, but I know how to look at a map and see, okay, this is really steep. Here's where you run along the ridge. Here's this steep descent. I know how to sort of look at this. And that skill alone will keep you out of so much trouble if you do your research and know what you're getting into ahead of time. The second thing is to tell people where you're going to be. And it sounds pretty cliche, but it's so important, you guys. Tell people where you're going, how long you expect to be out. If you know the specific trails that you're going to be on, just make sure that you tell them ahead of time so that they know when to go looking for you when you don't show up on time. And if you're going someplace remote like this, where, like I mentioned in the first audio note, that we didn't have cell phone service, having a way to communicate with people is really important. And so I'm sort of merging thing two and thing three here, because having a plan ahead of time, telling them that you won't be in contact because you'll be at a specific spot, and having a way to communicate with people, which sort of sounds like an oxymoron, but what I didn't cover before was that three of the five of us had some sort of GPS device. So I had my spot, Sarah had her spot, and Frank had his Garmin, and we all had ways to communicate. So we were dropping pins along the way. People could live track us. Mine doesn't have the ability to send two-way communications, but Frank's does. But I can call an SOS. Like I can put out the APB for like someone to come and save us. So could Sarah, so could Frank. So if we really got into a situation where we needed help, as long as we had a decent view of the sky, we would be able to call for help. So that's really helpful. The fourth thing is know the route and have maps. That sort of goes back to do your research and know what you're getting into, but know the route that you're going. Understand where your outs are. So like I mentioned, we got about halfway through and had to pull the plug. So we knew that we had to go a certain distance. We could take multiple different trails to get down, but we had to make these calculated decisions. And had we not known where we were going to be, had we not done the research and looked at the map and known the route ahead of time, we would have been in a worse off way. We might have ended up someplace where there were no people, you couldn't hitchhike, we would have had to walk all the way around to get back to our cars. So know the route, have maps with you. So Frank had the actual printed map, we had the map on Gaia, which is a mapping app that I used at Tahoe, which is really great. I think it's like $40 a year. Might be worth it if you're going into some really remote places. You can download the maps to be able to use them offline, which is really helpful. And again, knowing how to read a map will come into play with that as well. The fifth thing that we did that was really important was we had lots of extra food, lots of extra water, plus ways to filter water should we run out of the extra water that we had. One of the things that we joked about in our thread days and days ahead of time was how we had more snacks than we had anything else. And it was kind of a joke, but kind of not. So between all five of us, we had thousands of calories worth of food, and I ended up having extra food at the end, which was great. Even though we didn't do the full loop, I think I would have had just enough food. And we had lots of extra water. I was carrying 3 liters total on me, and I know everybody else was carrying a lot of water. Plus, I had my Katahdin filter so that if we ran out and we found water along the way, there were a couple different places that we could have stopped to get water. Plus, we could have just, what Sarah actually did at one point was filter the rainwater that was coming down the trail because there was a decent stream, and she drank that. And yeah, it was a funny color, but it didn't taste funky, and she had the same filter as me, which basically gets, oh gosh, I don't know what percentage, but a pretty high percentage, something like 99.9. I don't know. That's not an official stat, but it's right up there, the amount of contaminants and bacteria and stuff that it can filter out. So funky color doesn't matter. Potable water, that's all that matters. So extra food, extra water, plus a way to filter for water is really important. The next thing is the right clothing and the right gear. This cannot be overlooked. I mean, it's one thing if we were going up on a clear day with no chance of rain, but we were up there in, I would argue, probably some of the more challenging conditions because rain and mid-50s and wind might not sound like conditions for hypothermia, but it can turn into that pretty quickly, especially if you don't have a rain layer, a warmth layer, a way to keep heat in, like having a hat and gloves, having extra socks if you wanted to change from your wet shoes into your dry socks. Just having the right stuff, the right tools for the job is really important. Shoes with traction, poles, hats, gloves, all those things. And again, you know, on a smaller mountain like Monadnock, you might not think those are important, but I've posted pictures before where Adam or Frank and I have been starting out at the bottom and it's okay. Maybe it's overcast, but it's not doing anything crazy. And we've gotten to the top of Monadnock and it's a full-on windstorm. It might be raining, water is coming up from underneath, like it is wet and wild. Same thing is true here, especially in the White Mountains. The weather can turn on a dime. And actually, when we were coming down from the Galehead Hut, we heard thunder, rumbles of thunder, which we hadn't heard all day, but we knew were a possibility. So at that point, we knew that we had made the right choice to pull the plug and come down off the mountain. Because when you're up on the ridge, it's very exposed. There are a few places you could hide in between the rocks, but that's not really a place you want to be in a thunder and lightning storm. So having the right gear and the right clothing is really important. And then the last thing is just what I mentioned, knowing when to pull the plug. We weren't trying for an FKT. This wasn't a race like this. There was no reason for us to endanger ourselves unnecessarily. So yeah, would it have been nice to finish the whole thing? But we live to tell the tale, we live another day, and that's the most important part of all of this. So knowing your limits, I guess, should probably be part of this, and knowing when to pull the plug, having a plan to get yourself out, and just being okay with that. We went into this ahead of time knowing that this was a likely possibility. And so we weren't trying to push it. We weren't going to go beyond and really stretch ourselves to a dangerous place. And so knowing when you're going to pull the plug and how you're going to do it is super, super important. Okay, so that's a little bit of a recap about our failed PEMI loop, but we had so much fun. We already have plans to attempt it again, maybe at the end of September. That's still TBD. So, and if you guys want to join us, feel free, reach out, let me know. And yeah, hopefully that sort of inspires you guys to check out the PEMI loop. Like I said, do your research. Plan ahead, have, you know, maps, do all the things that we talked about here, and maybe even turn it into a 2-day hike, because it really is an aggressive. Next time we're probably going to start out earlier, maybe even at 2 a.m. Likely in September, it hopefully will not be raining. The conditions might be a little bit better for us to get in a full loop. We're definitely going to have to start and end in the dark depending on the day. We're going to lose a little bit of daylight at that point. But nonetheless, it's still a fabulous hike, especially when you get views. We got zero views because we were socked in with clouds and fog and rain. But no doubt there are some excellent views. There's some excellent views up there. We just didn't get any. So that's all for this episode, you guys. Enjoy this beach, and I'll see you all soon. Real quick before you guys go, a couple of resources that I want to remind you of. First is my free daily shakedown video. I've been posting a lot of my shakedowns recently, and you guys are sort of coming out of the woodwork confessing that you are sort of negligent in not doing your shakedown. So I want to remind you that I have a free video out there that you can watch that will walk you through the process of doing a shakedown from top to bottom. It takes maybe 15 minutes in this video, but you can dial it up or dial it down depending on how much time you have. So if you go over to my website, megan-gould.com, you can find the link up at the top of the page, get the daily shakedown. And the other is my free private Facebook group for women, called Run Your First 50K. So when you go to Facebook, just search Run Your First 50K up in groups. That's where you'll find us. Request to join, answer the questions, and you're in. This is a great resource if you're thinking about starting trail running, if you're thinking about starting to run ultras. It's an amazing group of women who have a lot of experience across the board, as well as people who are brand new. So don't be worried or be intimidated. It's a great cohesive group where you can ask questions and learn from other people's wins, from other people's failures, like my failure at the PEMI loop. And you can just start to wrap your brain around what it's going to take to run your first 50K and maybe your first 50 miles, your first 100 miles, so on and so forth. So make sure you go check that out. And I look forward to seeing you over there.